Hello, and welcome back to the Why Comics Podcast, the comic book show where we talk about comics we love and sometimes the people who create them. I'm your host, Jesse, and with me today is not my wonderful co-host, Hanna, who had some technical difficulties, but we do have a special guest. They've written articles for sites like Comic Book Herald and have their own newsletter called Technicolor Horizons. It's David Mann.
Hi, happy to be here.
David, I hope I got your last name right, because I have this whole thing where I think I get last names and I just go for it and then I mess it up.
It's just man, all good.
We're gonna talk about The Boxer by JH. It's a webtoon that you guys can find on Webtoons. It's 108 chapters currently.
Yeah, it sort of concludes at 104, but it's doing spin-off stuff.
Yeah. It's dealing with characters that it didn't really focus on. But before we jump into that, Dave, I want to ask you, what is your comic book history? Where are your favorite books? How'd you get into comics? Where are you at now with comics?
Well, I was always going to be a superhero person because my dad, he got into comics as a kid because I think his grandparents had a bookstore. So he would, go there after school and just flip through comics lying around there. And, he grew up with them and then he got into them into college. So the moment, I was a little kid and started getting really into Superman, he had the cartoons to show me and the George Reeves TV show and anything and everything. And then I think my first comic was this an issue of Spider-Man by John Byrne and I think Howard Mackey, which was completely inappropriate for me. It was about Peter trying to get a terrible job that he's overqualified for because otherwise he's going to be homeless. And also the Sandman is dying and just grotesquely melting. And they run in. Peter ends up getting arrested because he's wearing his nice clothes and he runs into this tenement building to help a kid who's stuck. And then cops raid the building because someone's stealing drugs out of there. And they see Peter in his nice suit and think he's a cokehead yuppie. And then he runs into Sandman and the whole thing explodes and he goes to his job and they won't hire him because he's overqualified and they kick him out before he can say, no, I need it. And the end of the issue is just him sadly walking down the street and seeing a help wanted sign for a dishwasher. And it was so dark and kind of a perfect Spider-Man comic in that everything's awful for that guy. And something about it clearly stuck with me. So, and years and years later, I was reading, I'd read comics that Dad gave me, but then I saw that there was going to be this comic in 2008 where Batman was going to die, and I wanted to read that, and I wanted to read all the Batman comics connected to it, and I don't know if that sort of thing would normally have worked, but that was Morrison's RIP, so it sure worked with me. And then I got all the Green Lantern stuff because that was what was big next. And then the New 52 and Marvel Now and the Big Image surge. And I've been on the train ever since.
What a heck of a point to jump on, too. I've been reading comics for a long time. And I didn't have a full-time job, though, until I was in college and everything. And so around New 52, I was starting to buy regularly again. And I remember I just walked into the store and I didn't know New 52 was happening because I wasn't keeping up. I wasn't buying regularly at the time. So I didn't know Flashpoint was happening or anything like that. Mm. And I just saw, Batman number one, Superman number one. And I just picked them off up of the shelf. And then I'm like, this is great. And then I didn't think about Savers because I didn't know if I was going to start buying regularly. And then all of a sudden those books are selling out every week.
Yeah. A lot of the New 52 stuff and even a lot of Marvel Now stuff does not shine that brightly almost a decade later. But sure, at the time that really felt monumental, and that was really when I went from getting a few comics to just being a person who bought comics.
And what made you decide then to get into doing comics crit and stuff like that?
That was, of all things, and I have no idea why I got this comic for sure, because it was outside the kind of stuff I was getting. Like, at that time, I was just, like, getting the big DC stuff. But I picked up Irredeemable number one by Mark Waid and Peter Krause, which was their take on Evil Superman, except unlike the majority of those, this was really good. And I guess I must have just seen it on a shelf one day and went, oh, Mark Waid, he wrote Kingdom Come, and this looks like a Superman kind of thing. And it was a comic about an awful Superman by someone who clearly loves Superman. Mm-hmm. And so I couldn't read it as, oh, here's why Superman would suck if he was real. So I kind of had, like, I would just take it apart in my head, like, okay, so what then is this saying about Superman, and by extension, and what does it say about this guy? And that sort of got me thinking about the character critically, which led to thinking about other comics in that way, and eventually reached the point where, you know, I started writing about them. And just one step at a time over years and years, but that was kind of the point that it all started. And actually, I remember the first article I ever had published was when I was 19, sequart.org, back when it was a lot more active, was just like, hey, Amazing Spider-Man 2 about to come out. Anyone want to pitch Spider-Man articles to us? So I just reread the Lee Ditko stuff, so I sent in a piece there, and they accepted it, and I've been writing on and off ever since, and pretty consistently lately.
You saying Amazing Spider-Man 2 made me think, like, which Amazing Spider-Man 2 was that? Was it the first slot reboot? Was it the second slot reboot? Was it the Spencer reboot?
The movie, the second Andrew Garfield.
See, my brain, that's how it tells you how the brain rot is.
It was sort of coming alongside one of the slot reboots, actually, but yeah, because they were just like, okay, if there's a big Spider-Man movie, let's hit those metrics, let's get out a bunch of Spider-Man articles that people can say, and so I pitched a thing to go with that. And which is good, because I remain one of the few people who still really likes Amazing Spider-Man 2, with full knowledge of all the reasons I probably shouldn't.
Hey, I mean, recently with the No Way Home coming out, when No Way Home coming out, I was like, I should rewatch all of Spider-Man.
That felt like some vindication right there.
Yeah, and I mean, going back, I always enjoyed Andrew Garfield as Peter and Spider-Man. I think he's like, he nails both very well, in my opinion. Yeah. I know the debate out there, and I know why there's the debate out there. But I just couldn't get into the movie. I thought the movie was like too long and kind of overblown in certain areas. And then I was like, I guess I'll never really watch Amazing Spider-Man 2, because I just heard so many awful things about it. And I finally got around to it, because I'm rewatching every Spider-Man movie, and I'm watching it, and it's like, you know, that movie is bad, but boy, did I have a great time.
It's bad in the way that, not in the way exactly that superhero movies are usually bad, but in the way that comics can be bad.
Yeah.
And that's good, for sure it's true. Good in a very Spider-Man comics way of it. It to me is like the superhero movie for capturing everything good and bad about that aspect of the experience. Like it's
if you ever read a comic book and you know that the writer thought they had six issues, but turns out they had three issues.
Exactly.
That's what Amazing Spider-Man 2 is. It's exactly. A comic book writer realizing they have less issues than they originally planned. It's the end of the Tom King Batman.
Oof.
People who listen to the show, not to say I don't love the ending of that comic, I just know that that's not the way that comic probably should end it.
Right.
So that leads us all the way now to talking about The Boxer, which was brought up to me by our mutual friend Sean, who's been on the show. They're like, hey, if you ever want to talk to David, you should talk about The Boxer. Yeah. And I mentally go, David's real smart. He must have made a comic. That's what that's about. And so I messaged you, and you go, well, I didn't make the comic, but it's this comic right here. I'm like, oh, the Webtoon the Boxer? Oh, I love that comic.
Well, thank you for your vote of confidence. I would like to make comics someday. But yeah, Boxer, the one Webtoon I'd read before was Dan Shikade's Urshikade Lavender Jack. Just mm-hmm. wonderful comic, probably the best superhero thing going right now, but that was kind of it. And I think it's Shikade. And when DC announced it was doing the big Batman Wayne Family Adventures thing, I was curious mm-hmm. about that, and then it got like almost a million subscribers overnight, and I realized, oh, this is actual big deal comics. This is what people actually read, you know, aside from like manga. I should probably check these out and see what these are like. And I went through and I subscribed to a bunch, and a bunch of them I kind of dropped off of, a bunch I enjoyed. The Boxer, I'm not actually positive what made me check out The Boxer. It was probably because also friends with me and Sean, Ritesh Babu, who is a big, big, big sports manga fan. And they've mentioned, you know, like, boxing comics a few times. And I, you know, I've seen the Rocky movies. Mm-hmm. I read Kill a Man from Philip Kennedy Johnson and Steve Orlando. And, the thing I'm looking at doesn't list... By Alec Morgan. It didn't list the artist right away, the thing I was looking at. And enjoyed that a great deal. I like both of them, all three of them. But I hadn't been a big boxing person, and I guess I thought the art looked neat, so I checked this out, and just swallowed me whole, pretty much.
Yeah, for me, I'm like a real big fan of sports manga and sports anime. Cause I think they have like found something that I think Western comics are slowly starting to figuring out, which is you can dramatize sports and get that nerd inside everybody like really hyped. Because I mean, that's what football is all about. People enjoy that during the regular American football season, football over in UK. Like there's something about the drama that people who aren't big sports fans understand, like the big sports fans understand, but the non-fans don't. But you can take that and make that into a narrative so well.
Yeah, and I think the more I read it, like this wasn't a big thing I was thinking of throughout it, but it did occur to me that it does sort of operate on recognizable terms to superhero comics, not in just that, you know, oh, it's an action thing, but in that the basic setup is rerunning the same type of conflict with the same rules and parameters over and over and over and over again, and trying to squeeze something new and interesting out of that setup each time.
Yeah. And addressing to the audience, which comics don't do all the time, but addressing to the audience, like these, we're just ratcheting this up. This is the same thing, but like showing graphs saying, hey, now we're going up. Like they have graphs in this comic at times saying, hey, this character's now strength is going skyrocketing, and you gotta watch that.
Yeah, and that and the big, like, some of the narration almost reached like some of those, like the self-published Steve Ditko Dietetic comics, like the big, like, hey, you audience, pay attention and listen. Yeah, I'll tell you some facts of life. And it works so well, and possibly we should explain the premise of the comic, because a lot of regular audience isn't gonna be familiar.
Yeah, I'll pitch it in just a second. But like the thing I that always gets me is boxing stuff in general, or fighting stuff in general. I mean, as you say, like Rocky movies, I adore those. Watch those with my dad. I think I watch Rocky 1 once a year, just because it's that kind of movie. And Warrior with Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton is one of my favorite movies. I mean, I haven't watched it since when it came out, so maybe it hasn't aged super well. But then there's Megaloboxing, there's Baki, like anime wise. like just fighting in general, there's something so visceral about that. Maybe it's because I grew up on Dragon Ball Z and I grew up on superheroes that like anything that deals with almost naked men punching each other in the face. So there's something about it that's like, yeah, that's real action.
As Vakotrinus would say, that's what life's all about.
Yeah. So the premise of this is about a kid named Yu who basically has nothing. He's grown up as kind of an orphan. We don't know. You won't get a ton of his backstory until late in the comic. And at one point, this guy jogs past him, shining bright like a beacon. And I don't remember. It's been so long since I read the beginning. I don't remember what he says to him.
Kid, if you're down, just remember all the stars are shining just for you.
Yeah, and there's something about this glowing guy that Yu's like, I gotta find this guy. I gotta look for him, kind of thing. But it doesn't really go anywhere. And he goes to high school and he sees this kid named Jay getting bullied by a very Bakugo-like character named Ryu. Is it Ryu?
Might be.
Yeah, I'm hoping I pronounced some of these names right. And basically learns he can fight real good by fighting this bully. And a coach named Kay sees this and goes, I can train you to be the best boxer in the world.
Yeah.
And things escalate from there.
Yeah, he is. And even at that point where it's not really boxing yet, it's just kids fighting in like a back alley. You know, you see the bully fighting and like it's really impressively choreographed, impressively framed action. And then you throws a punch and it's like the storytelling of the comic breaks.
Yeah.
You really feel this isn't even cool violence. This is vaguely disturbing how strong this kid is.
And I think from this point on, I should say that we'll probably talk a lot of spoilers from here on out. So if that premise sounds super interesting to you, pause this, go read 108 chapters, and then come back and you can hear about the rest of this episode, what we kind of talk about. But I want to talk about one of the things that they stopped doing, I feel like, after the Eren Tide fight. And that is the way when Yu punches or anybody that like kind of his level punches, it looks like a giant cannon blew through someone.
Yeah, like where like their whole head turns into the impact.
Yeah, and like there's just nothing there anymore. And I love that visual because it paints a picture without having anything there, which I think when you're trying to show someone throwing a punch, sometimes it's harder to do than you realize.
I imagine. That and Eren, that fight is... There's kind of a way fights in this work, except for that one, which is, it is a comic about unfairness. None of the fights are about, can you be beaten? It is about what is revealed in these people when they're up against a wall, up against what amounts to death. And Eren is the only time that the conflict isn't, I can't beat him. But is that even the person I want to be?
Yeah. And that's the thing about this is they don't give you anything really for you or Kay until like the 11th hour of the comic.
Yeah.
And that whole thing is to make everybody that you is going up against be the center of attention. And there's also a thing too, where I think this comic's really smart. It's not until the brothers fight. It's like the third or fourth main fight in the comic. It's not until that arc that you realize, oh, you and Kay aren't the good guys. They're the bad guys.
Yeah, Kay turns out to basically be the Punisher. Like the Punisher if Frank had an even worse day. And I mean, you sort of get that sense already with the fight with Takeda and the just heartbreaking end of that fight.
Yeah.
You start to understand, like, oh, he destroyed this another human being. This is...
Yeah.
This isn't going to end well. But, and God, all the Takeda stuff. I mean, I could ramble on about any of the fighters in this, but everything with him was one of the big highlights of the series for me.
I do think Takeda had maybe the most thought put into him next to Aaron and you as characters.
Yeah, like, and he didn't exactly need to be, because of all of them, he's the most of a cartoon character. Mm-hmm. In that, like, if every single person you fights is a very basic archetype that I love way up, Takeda's the protagonist of a boxing manga.
Yeah.
Just as far as you can take that.
I mean, at some point they compare him to a Kamen Rider, like that, yeah. Like that's basically his personality.
Yeah, his big moment is the most generic. That day, a Superman was born. And he fights an opposite palette boxing rival to get as good as he is. And I'm very glad I just started watching Kamen Rider so I could appreciate that bit.
It's the thing though where like you get to the near the end too, and we're jumping all around because this is one of those things that I have a hard time just picking any place to start with, because there's so many just cool things and you kind of like forget that the one thing is cool, but then it relates to something else, and so you keep on bouncing back and forth. But the final fight with Jade, the god basically, and like Jesus. All the Christ stuff at the end. Boxing Jesus, literally boxing Jesus.
Yeah, which, I mean, and you go back to the first strip, and the first thing you see is that like antenna pole that you now realize is a cross, and and that worked so well for me. It's the kind of reveal that, like, if you just say, "Oh, the end of the comic is our lead protagonist finding salvation through Jesus," that sounds not great as like a narrative endpoint that sort of comes out of nowhere, but the way it recontextualizes the comic in terms of that violence was never going to be what saves him, and that what does save every person he fights up against up to that point is love. That, you know, mm-hmm. John Pierre realizes, wait, I have a wife and soon a kid. This can't be my life. And Takeda with his adoptive mother and the brothers with their mom and Aaron Todd with his wife and Victor with Mohawks, I guess. And all of them. And that in the end, love is the only thing that is going to be able to save any of these people, that you're never going to stop you by beating him, except that he does land the one punch at the end after a whole comic of wondering if someone's going to punch him. Jay does a little tap, and that in that this is a comic where every single archetype is ratcheted all the way up. Of course, the guy who is literally going to save him through love is Jesus. That makes perfect sense.
And when I got there, because Sean had commented, I don't know if Sean DM'd me or commented on something, and they just said, have you accepted boxing Jesus in your life? I'm like, okay, so there's gonna be like the god of boxing at some point in this, I guess. But I didn't realize how on the nose they were going with it. And when I got there, as someone who's grown up with religion all their life, I was very much like, my brain automatically went, oh no, not like this.
And before then, like with, and it's a bit, but you realize in retrospect, it's the whole comic when Victor does the holy punch, lifting his fist to hit the water. It's the whole comic in one panel, and you don't know it until afterwards.
Yeah, but when they get to the end of that, and it's like, it doesn't even matter if this is a metaphor or not at that point, because it's so well done, and like I was reading the comments too as I was going through, just because every once in a while I would scroll too fast and I would hit the comments before I realized it. And one of them said, if this ends with Jay just giving you a hug, like, it feels like that's where this is heading. And then I got to that last chapter, I'm like, he's gonna hug him, isn't he? That's what this is all leading up to, because all he needs is a hug.
And it just destroys him and cracks him open, and that's what saves the day, essentially. And it...
Yeah.
And, like, even just you falling apart, that's a bit that should feel so hackneyed, that, like, oh no, now he can't put this guy down, so he's flipping out. But it feels so raw and so earned, because the storytelling is so strong from beginning to end on pretty much every level.
And like, the visuals up to that point too, there's so many things where you is just so broken down with, why is there so much pain? Why have I suffered so much? And they keep on showing that visual of Jay crossing a field of just bodies and bones to get to you. But it's all in the ring. This is all the ring, though. And I'm like, I feel like every one of those skeletons is kind of a metaphor for all the punches Jay has to endure to get to that 12th round. Jeez.
Because I saw someone refer to you as basically the living embodiment of depression. And that's exactly it, and why that last fight feels as big as it is, even though, strictly speaking, it is, in pure boxing terms, the least dramatic fight in the series. Because
it's completely one-sided.
It's just him destroying this guy.
I do wish they elaborated a bit more. I mean, I know that what they were going for, a metaphor or a very non-metaphor of Jesus just dying to save someone. But I do wish they would have elaborated more on Jay and his condition and why he retired and what was going on with him. Because they did so much with Aaron that I was like wanting more from Jay. Like,
with Jay, you get just enough to get a little bit of context, because you know he was an orphan and that he ends up working at the orphanage, which they never say it, but I kind of... Like, the way I sort of put the pieces together, which may or may not be what the author intended, was, you know, it mentions, like, he left boxing to go traveling the world, and it looks like that's when he saw you. And in my head, I feel like Jay probably walked away from that and went, oh, wait, I should have done more for that kid. Well, I can do more for other kids like people did for me, and that's when he goes to work at the orphanage. And then at the end, you know, you does that from day one. I guess, like, it's implied that he, you know, brought that kid at the end in himself.
And him and Carmen run an orphanage, which is very sweet. It's a very sweet meeting.
Which really, it's... The real reason Jay can't adopt you is because Jay can only spiritually save you. He couldn't, like, literally physically adopt him. But the way it's... In so much as he is... a real person and not a walking symbol. That's kind of how I read it.
What is the name of the Mohawk boxer again? I can't
Victor.
Remember. Victor. The whole Victor arc is a very nice reprieve from everything too, because you get back-to-back heavy stories and then you know you're heading to another heavy one, and then Victor shows up with his Mohawk and you're like, oh, wait a second.
To the point where, like, the creator just does a little intermediary strip to say, hey, I need to put Victor there, or I would have just made everyone too sad. And what's so great about the Victor bit is once it turns into Victor takes over the world and fights aliens, you know that it's broken with reality, but you're not absolutely positive at which point it did, because you could...
Yeah.
He's so stupid that you can almost believe he got one in on you.
Yeah. And
then it comes back, and you, like, learn that, oh, his backstory wasn't a gag. He lost his girlfriend, and that...
Yeah.
And that... So many bits in this comic that should feel very silly and out of place, but it balances it all just right.
And it's one of those things, too, where, like, I didn't realize that this comic had basically ended until I started finishing it up yesterday, and I saw it said epilogue, and I'm like, oh, so this actually has ended. And it reminded me too, because I was really into God of High School and Tower of God, and I kind of just burned myself out on reading those because they're so long.
I've heard those are good, and, you know, one day I guess I'll read Lore Olympus, but those two are just, that's too much.
Yeah, it's a lot. But God of High School's issue is that there's no such thing as cap. There's no cap on anything. Everybody just escalates to everybody, and they never stop escalating. It's like the real issue with Dragon Ball GT, not with Super in a way, is like GT's escalation just didn't make any sense for anybody. Mm-hmm. Where it's the same thing out of high school. At some point, you're like, man, don't you guys ever just get tired of fighting each other? Yeah, and so that's what I liked about this having like a definitive endpoint and you trying to reach one goal and getting there, not in 100 or I guess 100, but not in like 500 chapters or 1,000 chapters, but in a time that you could read this over a week and like get to it if you really wanted to.
Yeah, and it has to be self-contained also, because this, one of my big fears with this is I'm glad it's only extremely popular instead of like worldwide success, because if it were, it would be called the One Punch Man of boxing comics, and that would drive me nuts.
Yeah.
But it is sort of that thing where you can only drag out the suspense on this so long. Like in that final fight, there's a big monologue of like, you know, he's faced perfection of technique and intent and pure strength and so on. It's like, yeah, he did all the things. You can't just... There's only so many angles you can hit that from.
Yeah. And when they get to the Eren fight, too, you kind of feel that wane. And it's like, is there anything that can stop this kid? Because Eren is just built up to be such a massive force. And yeah, you're like, yeah, but he's bruising his organs.
Yeah, and it still sells it. It sells it like... Oh yeah, no, he is another monster. He actually could do this, but that's why his fight can't work the same as the others.
Yeah. Oh, man, it just escalates so perfectly. And again, it starts off as such a simple boxing story, and then by the time you reach the third fight, you're like, wait a second, this isn't so simple. And then the time you reach the fifth fight, you're like, wait a second, the main characters are the bad guys. And it just shifts everything so drastically, like every third of the way through it. It's very impressive that this writer like was able to hold that story together.
Yeah, and I ended up looking him up afterwards, and apparently he's done a couple other comics, but like much briefer ones. He's still early in his career, which this reads like something you spend your whole life getting ready to do. So I really can't imagine where he goes off of this.
Yeah, same. And it's always a hard thing too when you have such a successful story and you personally, because there's a lot of notes from the creator throughout this with the hiatus episodes and just even like the end. Like they even say multiple times, I didn't think this was going to be good. I didn't think anybody was going to like this. I didn't think it was going to get popular. And so like when you get that unexpected boost in popularity and you realize people actually really love the stories that you're telling, I think that's hard to kind of follow up.
Yeah. And there's so many creators, so many great creators, so many creators who have output I still like, who like you can tell there's a moment early on where they decide what their gimmick is. And that's just it forever. There's even... One of my favorite moments in any comic ever is an issue of Jonathan Hickman's Manhattan Projects with Nick Parada, who Hickman had really, I could tell reading Avengers at that point, started falling deeper and deeper into his own little stylistic niche. And I was a little worried that that was what was going to happen to him, but he was just going to keep... digging further and further into that soil. And there's a bit in Manhattan Projects where these two scientists are talking, and one mentions, because he's a radioactive skeleton, that he misses ice cream. And the other goes off and says, well, you're missing the broader point, and goes into a big discussion on the nature of ambition and growth and scientific discovery. And then the radioactive skeleton guy makes a compelling rebuttal and then adds, and by the way, your broader point, it's a broader point of an asshole. I just want ice cream. Yeah. And I realized, oh, thank God he realized it. It's going to be okay. And I don't think that's something that JH is going to fall into, because what little bit else he's had published that was translated is in, I mean, still dealing with these ideas of meaning in the face of death, but they're still very different comics, and there is such a strong forethought and craft put into these that I can't ever imagine him fully, like, balling up his own ass, essentially.
Yeah. Which is always a good feeling to have about a writer. Yeah. Sometimes you're like, you look at a few and you're like, please don't. But then they do.
A few, and like some even remain readable in their own ways after that point, but you still feel it. And
yeah.
And God, he was writing this and he was drawing this. I can't imagine. Yeah,
it's the most impressive things about webtoons. Like my, one of the ones I was like going back to some of the other webtoons I've read, Tower of God. I was marathon reading it, and I got to a point where they were originally went on hiatus, and the creator's like, "Yeah, I have to enlist as you have to just actively enlist in North Korea or South Korea."
Yeah.
Whichever one's the free one. My brain's like split it up wrong. South Korea. And they go, "Yeah, so it's gonna go on a hiatus while I'm basically on act, because I can't really do this while I'm in the military, but I'll be back." And I'm like, "Oh, they've been doing this all by themselves. I completely forgot about that." Yeah, and
like there was one of the smaller comics, not one of like the main webtoons things, but like the canvas thing that I guess anyone can post on. I was reading one of those, and someone just mentioned, "Oh, hey, I gotta go away for a bit. Like my entire neighborhood is underwater now, and also I have COVID, and also the generator in my house exploded or something." It just didn't, you know, but it's all good. I'll be back. I'm not going to be lazy. I'll be back in like a week and a half. It's some work ethic.
Yeah. It's the same thing. Like, with manga and mangaka and all that.
Well, yeah, and that's, a whole labor discussion unto itself.
It's just, man. Comics, man. They'll work you to death, but if you like what you do.
Yeah, I remember I tried, I didn't get far into it, but this one manga, Bakuman, about making manga, and one of the inciting incidents is just the main character's uncle died at his drawing table.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I see artists sharing posts all the time about like stretches you should do so you don't destroy your hand doing these. And
I mean, there's like all the kind of depressing, but also like it seemed like it was like he wanted to do this, but John Pollione like drawing basically his deathbed because he wanted to keep drawing it. It's like, I just so want you to be happy and healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, you know, already thinking of George Perez lately, but and JLA Avenger specifically, but thinking of how the last issue got delayed by months because he basically destroyed his hand drawing that cover of a third issue of every character who'd ever been on either team. Much like boxing, it can be a destructive art.
Yeah. Yeah, it's comics, man. They're fantastic, but also very unhealthy. Yes.
That is the story of them for sure.
David, I'm not sure if there's anything else about the boxer that you want to talk about before we move on to just kind of any other thing.
I mean, I'm sure yes, but simultaneously, no, not really. And yes, I could talk for another 3 hours about it. So
it's one of those things where like, we would have to get to really granular details, and at that point I think both of us have done that to other people.
Yeah, like I had like a 2-hour discussion with Sean the night he finished it, so yeah. And if you've listened this far and you haven't read the comic, like I know we've already kind of said where it's going, but I swear it is absolutely incredible work, absolutely worth the time investment, and it's free. Well, you can pay to go ahead, which I did pay to read the last chapter of the main story a little ahead of schedule because I was on a roll and I needed that ending.
Yeah, and I think it's worth it. I think don't do what I did and read like 70 chapters in 2 days. But I think it's especially like it's only the I think the final is like 104 chapters. Mm-hmm. Just put that up over a week. It's not that many.
Yeah, that's certainly doable. Although Sean, like, I think read the whole thing in one day, which made my jaw drop because beginning of the day, beginning of the day messaged me like, "Hey, I'm starting the box," or end of the day, he messaged, "Hey, I'm in the Eren fight," and I had to do a double take. Okay, so yeah, anything else you wanted to ask me about?
Well, we didn't get any questions, but I do know that we're both big fans of certain mm-hmm. things, and so since I just have you here for a moment, let's talk about the Batman. Now, we did record our spoiler cast last episode, so that is all there. That's an hour and a half of partially me ranting and raving mm-hmm. about this. But this will also not have spoilers, so watch out. I just want to talk about the Batman more because I saw it again last night. It's so good.
I mentioned with Burton and Schumacher, you could really tell they were asked and they went, "Oh, well, Batman from that TV show. Okay, yeah, I can make a movie about that guy." And that worked out pretty well. And Nolan, I'm sure Michael Uslan handed him like a big stack of comics and he read those and went, "Okay, yeah, there's interesting stuff there to work with." Matt Reeves, with none of the pitfalls that can come with fanboy stuff, really watching that, you can feel that this is a movie made by someone, you know, very smart, drawing a lot of influences, who has also absolutely spent his whole life reading Batman comics.
Yeah, and I was talking to one of my friends who I saw it with last night, who never had seen it yet, and she was like, there's something about it, like, the way it captures this, it captures that, and, like, she's seen Batman Begins in The Dark Knight, but she has not seen Dark Knight Rises. Me and her plan to get to that at some point. But I basically go, this movie cares about the comics, not the mythology.
Yeah, it's so... And the thing that makes me say that isn't even in terms of, oh, they mentioned this and this and this, but in terms of how incredibly matter-of-fact it is about Batman... The moment I knew the movie was going to be great was when they're at the first crime scene and the forensics guy just sort of asks, "Excuse me, can you move? I need to..." That it is, like, it is absolutely fine with people just talking about what an absolute freak Batman is, and none of that detracts from it clearly thinking that Batman's the coolest thing in the world. And that's an approach I think... you can only completely get if you're really immersed in this stuff.
Yeah, and as someone, I've written on the Patreon, if people have read it, and I've posted it for free now too, like, how deeply Batman as a character has been with me since I say this every time, but it's literally what my parents have told me multiple times, that my third word was Batman. And, like, I saw Batman Forever before I even hit, like, 1 year old, or I was, like, barely 1 year old when I saw it, because my parents were like, "Oh, we got to go see a movie. Let's take the kid." This character's been ingrained with me so long that, like, I at times feel like I only live and breathe the character because it's something I just connect with. And seeing this movie and feeling, like, a cathartic feeling of, like, yeah, this is it. This is what I've been waiting for.
It's such an incredible work, and so much of it on Pattinson's shoulders as much as Reeves, of making this guy feel strange and new again after 80 years, which, if you're going to be making a movie after 80 years, you really got to nail that, and it does an absolutely remarkable job of making this guy feel like, oh yeah, this is a weird figure of the night, and also... not an okay human being.
Yeah, and like the way it dabbles in things that I think other creators would be scared to dabble in when it comes to, if we're gonna call people out, I mean, Nolan's very scared to dabble in it at times, where like certain political things that Batman is about, and it's been at least about since the 80s, and no one for some reason wants to challenge it.
And I mean, Nolan like was very, I mean, the Dark Knight is this big war on terror movie, and this movie basically ends with a 4chan coordinated mass shooting. And what really cracks me up is that the after all these years and all this discourse, the inciting villainous incident of the movie ends up being the Wayne family trying to fix the city through charity instead of being Batman, and that going horribly, horribly wrong. And
yeah,
it goes, like, it's a really tight Batman adventure that juggles so much so deftly.
Mm-hmm.
Really, like, I mean, I know it was 3 hours. I want whatever ridiculous 5 hour longer cut of this there may not be, because if nothing else, because this involved less CGI, so it might actually be doable. And also, he said he had the thing, but this is absolutely a Batman where I'm not just excited to see him going forward. I'm even excited for those HBO Max shows that I thought sounded ridiculous at first, but now, yes, please, yeah, give me like 6 hours of Colin Farrell Penguin.
And like, it's gonna be 6 hours of Colin Farrell Penguin, probably Black Mask, because
he's the easiest guy in the world, and that Arkham show, which they're talking about, is like a haunted house thing. And what occurred to me, and this is, I guess this is the moment I'll indulge in a big dopey fan theory, but I'm kind of wondering if that show's going to be, is because, you know, at the end, Gotham is full no man's land.
Yeah. But
Riddler makes a point of Arkham's one of the only places in the city that hasn't been flooded. So I'm wondering if the deal with the Arkham show is going to essentially be, okay, all of the guards and inmates are trapped in there and none of them can leave because the city's basically been destroyed. So it's all just them in Arkham.
I mean, it really feels like it's going to be Morrison's Arkham. Serious
House on Serious Earth, which wouldn't that be something to make a show? And I'm even wondering if that's where we're really going to see Joker, because they tease that, but on the viral stuff, but apparently Reeves is leaning more towards Mr. Freeze for the next movie, so.
Which would be cool. It'd be cool to see Mr. Freeze. Yeah, I think
this is a world that can support that kind of thing. And he sure sounds like he might do Robin, which is all I want out of superhero movies, is them finally doing Batman and Robin.
As much as I don't want this to be a third, three-movie franchise, I would like this to be a longer franchise, because it seems like both of them want to do this for as long as I can. I
certainly see it going almost indefinitely.
But I do hope, like, this will be the third time around, but I do hope that we end with Bane, and it actually is Bane and not some whatever we've been getting.
Oh.
Because it feels like that's what this world is like, this is the 90s and 2010s Batman movie combined into one universe.
All loves to Hardy's incredible performance in that, sincerely. But I think, they could do Bane. They could do, like, Black Glove and Dr. Hurt. They could get away with, it feels like, virtually anything on the heels of this. And
I mean, I can see Reeves and Pattinson being the only two people that can pull off Court of Owls and make it anywhere near as trippy as Court of Owls.
That I would prefer Black Glove over Court of Owls, but certainly if anyone's going to make Court of Owls something where I'm like, yes, absolutely, go all in on those guys, certainly it is this team in the wake of this movie.
I think Black Glove would be more refreshing than Court of Owls, since it at least seems like every Batman property in the last 10 years has wanted to do something Court of Owls.
Bad stuff with Thomas. It is a shame that we've now seen Thomas, because Ritesh again was really pulling for casting Mads Mikkelsen as Hurt in these, and you can't really do that when we've already seen Thomas be some other guy, but...
Yeah.
But I'd be happy if they wrote around it.
But, and there's also the hints to Hush, maybe not do the original Hush storyline.
Being Hush for all intents and purposes, and, you know, he's got the mask and everything, but they could, I mean, a lot of stuff that I would say, nah, I don't really want to see him do that. Like, coming off the heels of this movie, I would be willing to see where they go with it, because I wouldn't have been very happy about them doing Hush, and this basically does Hush, but much better, so...
Yeah, it's a good time. I don't think I've had a better time watching a superhero movie.
I you know, I watched it for a second time today, and I think it's the first time since I was a teenager I've gone to see a movie a second time.
I kind of saw Batman vs. Superman a lot, and I like a lot of parts of that movie, a lot of parts I don't like about that movie, but I can't imagine ever doing this for another movie anytime soon, how many times I've seen this one film. And I'm glad it's coming to streaming in a couple months, so I can do it even more.
I'll want to wait a little longer this time, so it feels a little less familiar, but yeah, this is certainly a movie I'll be watching at least a third time someday.
Again, David, thank you for coming on and talking with me. Where can people find you on the internet?
People can find me on DavidMan95 on Twitter, on Button Down. That's where I publish my newsletter, like, once a month-ish, although I might be skipping next month because of a big thing I'm working on elsewhere. At Button Down, I'm just David Mann, and I write pieces semi-regularly for Comic Book Herald, and that's where I'm kind of planning on a lot of my future work being.
Awesome. In 2 weeks, we'll be covering some comic. I don't know what yet, because Hanna, I have not discussed this. But you'll figure it. We'll figure it out, and you'll see it on Twitter. You can find this show on Twitter at YComicsPod. If you want to support us on Patreon, like our two Patreon producers, Anthony Greco and Patrick Mullman, you can support us at patreon.com/YComics. We have three tiers you can choose from, and they all have different kinds of perks. You can email us at YComicsPodcast@gmail.com. If you want to be a guest on the show, have questions for future guests, or have stories about how comics impacted you that you want read on this show, you can reach us at all those places. If you like the show, please tell a friend to leave a review. The logo is done by Zach Russell, and you can find all of their work at Cavity Crew everywhere. The theme is Join the Restaurant by David Zetzi. And remember, guys, the god of boxing would probably punch some Nazis.
You'd think.